If I touch someone, I can feel their feelings.
You feel love?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel a general unselfish love for just about everybody.
No, sexual love.
No, no, I don't.
For her.
No.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret.
Dude, come on. I think you're overreacting a little bit.
You must be so embarrassed. Do me, do me, do me.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, because today's the day the long-awaited, highly anticipated sequel is in the theaters.
I'm Groot.
And my good friend Dave Bautista, a.k.a. Drax the Destroyer.
Nobody talks to my friends like that.
Returns to Talk is Jericho today. He's been one seriously busy dude. He's one of the biggest movie stars that you've never really know as far as how many great, great talents he's worked with over the last few years. Of the last time he was on the show, he was the villain in the Bond movie Spectre with Daniel Craig. We'll talk about that. He filmed Blade Runner 2 with Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford. Escape Plan 2 with Sylvester Stallone. He did a movie with De Niro. He's going to do a movie with Jodie Foster. And, of course, the Guardians of the Galaxy sequel and an Avengers movie. I mean, how many movies is this guy in? I mean, it's crazy. And we're going to see what he has to say about working with Robert Downey Jr. and the rest of the Avengers crew. Dave's got tons of stories from all the movies he's done. And, of course, we'll talk a little wrestling as well. Does he miss it? What's his favorite WrestleMania match? Does he want to come back to the WWE? Who would he want to work with? All of this stuff and more. We'll also talk about his famous WrestleMania main event with The Undertaker. Great conversation with my good bud Dave Bautista. But before we jump on in, I'm doing a couple of spoken word shows in Ireland. The Words of Jericho. Listen in, man. June 7th show in Belfast at the Mandela Hall is already sold out, but there's still a couple of general admission tickets left to the Dublin show June 8th at Vicar Street. You can get those at Ticketmaster.ie. And don't forget about the Fozzy Judas Rising Tour, which starts tonight, May 5th, in Virginia Beach, Virginia, at the Lunatic Luau with Avenged Sevenfold. King and Sons of Texas are joining us on this run, and they will be with us for the whole tour. You can get tickets to the show and all shows, plus VIP meet and greets at FozzyRock.com. And we do the VIP meet and greet experience right. We give you an experience of a lifetime. You get to see a private sound check. We'll play songs at sound check we don't play any other time. You get to hang with us, take pictures with the band, take pictures with me, a little Q&A with Chris Jericho. It's the best VIP experience in rock and roll, I guarantee it. Don't forget about Lunatic Luau, then the 6th in the Revival in Canton, Georgia. I'm here right now. What a great venue. On the outside, it's called the Action Church, but the inside, it's a great, great venue. Carolina Rebellion on the 7th, the Concourse in Knoxville on the 9th, Trixie's in Louisville on the 10th. The 11th is The Rave in Milwaukee. 12th, Green Bay Distillery in Green Bay. 14th, Northern Invasion. 16th is the Diesel Club in Pittsburgh. 17th, Chameleon Club in Lancaster. 18th, Pachog, New York. 19th, House of Independence, Asbury Park, New Jersey. Blue Fox in Winchester on the 20th. 21st is in Morgantown, West Virginia at the Main Stage. 23rd, Machine Shop in Flint. 24th, The Forge in Joliet. 25th, Foo Bar in St. Louis, and then it's Rocklahoma, River City Rock Fest in Dallas, BFD Festival on 26th, 27th, 28th. If you are interested in coming to check us out, please buy some tickets and come rock with us. The new single, Judas, is available on YouTube. It's available now on iTunes, and we're going to play it right now. It's got over 250,000 views in only 2 or 3 days, so I want you to hear it. Here we go from Fozzy. This is called Judas right here on Talk is Jericho.
On the inside, you are innocence personified, and I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will drag. You out. Embraced by the darkness, I'm losing.
lot of people are saying that's the best Fozzy song that we've ever done. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad you think so. And don't forget, if you're in Europe, come see us at the Download Festival. And I'm hosting the Metal Hammer Awards on June 12th, Milton Keys on the 13th, and we got a secret gig on the 14th. Lots of stuff going on for Judas. We thank you so much. We thank you for getting into the band. If you've never heard us before, I'm glad you gave us a chance. It's going to be a great summer with Fozzy and a great show today with Dave Bautista. All right, Drax the Destroyer coming up.
Talk is Jericho.
A lot of this stuff is all kind of music related, yeah. Right? But it's the Loch Ness Monster with Paul Stanley's makeup.
Oh, this is fucking the stones. Great.
Yeah, man. So we've got a lot of cool stuff. You got any new ink at all?
No, my shit's all like cover. I got cover up there. I got pissed at Manny Pacquiao. I used to have a Team Pacquiao tattoo, and he's on my shit list, so I had covered him up. He's gone for my life. I got some flags. I was feeling kind of patriotic. Because we're in such a shit storm right now.
So, right.
Still want to, still. Yeah.
But do you remember what your first tattoo was?
Yeah, it was. I told you, right?
Which one of those? I don't think you did.
It was the one on my ass. Are we on?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. I've told this story before. I don't think I've actually ever told it in an interview, though. But so my first tattoo was when I was 18. And I wanted to tattoo real bad, but I didn't want my dad to see it. Mm-hmm. So I went and I got it on my ass. And it's like it was, we're talking the 80s. And so I went and I saw this tattoo, and it was like this stone heart, and it said heart of stone. I was like, yeah, that's tough. I didn't get that. And so I went to this old redneck, man, this place in Arlington, Virginia. And the guys asked me, what do you want? And I said this. And he said, where do you want it? I said, on my ass. And he's like, you sure? I was like, yeah. And as he's like shaving my ass, even he goes, are you sure you want this on your ass? And I was like, yeah. And I was just, I liked it for about 2 days. And I was like, God, why'd I do that?
It's always the thing, like, why would you get a tattoo that no one can see? Like my rebellion. I'm just like,
I'm so tough, and I'm going to hide this from my dad.
So when did your dad finally ever see it?
No, I don't know if he ever did. And my dad and I were not close at all.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And so I wasn't with him that long. But at the time, I was living with him. I don't even know if he's ever known.
Well, there you go.
Well, no, now.
Dad, if you're listening, for the first time. Yeah. How old were you then?
I must have been like 18.
But it's funny too, because we're talking, we're here with Dave Bautista, and some people call him Drax, and some people call him Hanks, and some people call him Animal. I just call him Big Dave. But with all the tattoos, does that ever affect, like, when you do roles and stuff like that?
I don't know, man. It kind of is one of those things where it just kind of is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's my image is what it is, and I will get parts for it, or I won't get parts because of it. I've been pretty fortunate. Fortunately, Drax makeup covers everything. Drax is my bread and butter. So everything kind of falls back on that.
Do they have to put like for example, I had a long story for America's Funniest Videos, the host of it, and they wanted me to get rid of my tattoo on my hand.
Right.
So they had to put this really thick makeup on that kind of covers it completely, but it stays on for a few days.
Right.
Do you have to do that with Drax before you start putting
No, not with Drax, because they just layer me with paint, like gray paint, before they even put on the prosthetics.
Right.
But other tattoos, like Kingside, films like Kingside did for Bond, they covered me up.
How long does that take for you to get covered?
Well, because that was just my wrist and the top of my neck. It didn't take long at all.
Oh, because you're wearing like a suit jacket or something?
Yeah, but I know that makeup, man, just stays on. You literally have to scrub it off. I cover up my... my wedding tattoo. Yeah, I cover that a lot, and that'll even be on for days.
It's funny how it stays on there for a long, long time, which I guess is good if you have to get it every morning before you shoot, right? Yeah.
You know what? I'm sorry, man. I've gotten a lot of grief over this for years, but my belly button tattoo. Mm-hmm. Well, I just got it covered up.
Did you?
I did.
But there was like kind of a circle with the fire going up.
It was awful, man. It was awful. But it's straight out of the early 90s, and it was like an anniversary thing. So it had meaning. So that's why I waited so long to get it covered up. And also, I just didn't want to cover it up with another regret. And I even looked into having it removed, but. It's like when they remove tattoos now, they scar you, and it takes away all your hair, too, because they do it with laser. Now I'm going to have a big pale scar in the middle of my stomach and be bald, can't grow hair.
It's so kind of what's the point, too?
It's a trade-off,
If you're going to go get one tattoo removed and you've got 1,000 other ones, right? So what does it matter?
At this point, it doesn't matter,
man. Yeah, just add something else.
The only one who has to deal with it is my wife, and if she's okay with it.
Well, she's got tattoos, too, right?
She's all inked up, man.
Yeah, so that's perfect.
She's Awesome.
It's the new thing. Yeah, that's right. We went to your wedding last year, which was a great, great time.
Really good time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Did she come with you a lot? Because you've been you're gone a lot now, obviously filming.
Yeah, if we spend more than 3 weeks apart, she'll try to come and visit. But there's, for one, she hates traveling. Two, she doesn't like all the commotion. She doesn't like being on set. She doesn't like all the attention. So even like going out in public, she doesn't like all like attention. Gotcha, she gets overwhelmed with it.
It's always super boring too when you're on set, just kind of waiting.
Yeah, and she does like she gets overwhelmed. Like I introduce her to 1,000 people, you know, I want her to meet everybody, but you know, more than 10 people, and she's like wants to climb into a show. Just like, leave me alone. I don't want to meet anybody else, and she can't remember anybody's name.
Right. It's hard.
Yeah,
she meets so many people at once.
You can see the anxiety just building. She starts to turn red.
How is it for you now? Do more people recognize you, or is it the same?
Yeah, you know, it's weird, man. So it's like here I hardly ever get recognized, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, and every once in a while when I do, it's kind of you're that guy. Yeah.
But it's funny because I guess the Drax thing with being all green and stuff, people probably wonder like, is that really him?
Yeah, no, it hasn't been an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now I mentioned before when we were talking, you came in last time, you kind of had a beard and some hair. Now you're like bald, clean shaven.
Right.
And so you wanted to do some different stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really, you know, when we talked about, I always set out, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to establish myself as an actor. I didn't want to be like a movie star. I didn't want to be the next Rock. So, you know, I lost a lot of weight. I stayed away from the weights. I tried to get more of a normal look. It wasn't real successful at doing that. But anyway, I attempted, and I grew facial hair just to make me, you know, look a little bit more or less rough around the edges. But, you know, now I'm kind of want those roles that I was turning down at first. You know,
what kind of roles?
Like bigger action roles, action star roles. I want to go after the kind of stuff that people would expect me to do because I think I've established myself as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I built a little bit of credibility, but now I can afford to go after those roles and not get typecast because that's what I was. I didn't want to get typecast, you know.
Which is the same thing that The Rock went through 10 years ago when he got really skinny. If you see pictures of him,
right.
He's doing Tooth Fairy and that sort of thing. It's like, holy shit, did he ever turn his mind around on that as well?
Yeah, and then he, you know, went back to wrestling, got his audience back, you know, got super jacked, and just went after those big blockbuster roles. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. It's a luxury for me to have like guardians to fall back on because now I know that, you know, that's my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. Drax is my bread and butter. Marvel's really good to me. But now I can go out and do indie films.
Right.
Yeah, I can take on those acting roles. So it's really a great luxury to have. But also at the end of the day, I still need to pay the bills.
But it also, too, Dave, it seems like, you know, you've become almost like a really big movie star, almost under the radar.
Under the radar.
But you talk about The Rock, and now John Cena's getting a lot of stuff. But think of all the stuff that you've done since Drax. And we mentioned, you know, Blade Runner with Harrison Ford, and you did, you know, the Bond movie, and then you're in Avengers as a result, still as Drax. But the thing with Stallone, which we have to talk about, but it's just suddenly Batista, you're the it guy for guys if they're looking for somebody who's big, jacked up guy. But that's good, though. Yeah. That's your niche now.
That's what I'm trying to really establish. And the reason is because I found that, you know, the more of a commodity you are, the easier it is to get shit done. You know, that's when you can, like, you can go to studios with scripts and say, man, I'd really like to make this movie. And they say, yeah, we can make some money off that. Let's do it. You know, so if you establish your name like that and you're marketable and they can, you know, you're profitable, they will, you'll get projects done. And that's where I want to be because I want to start getting my own projects done. I want to go to them, say, this is a great script, man. We should really do this and do it, even whether I'm in it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I want to be able to.
Behind the scenes as a producer.
I do. That's where I want to be. Yeah. Because I'm starting to think retirement now.
And really?
So, yeah, for sure. I don't have a huge window left.
For acting, really?
Yeah, no. Because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, just the way I'm built and the way I look, it's just going to limit me. And
I see what you're saying.
As I'm aging, it's going to limit me even more.
It's like when Terminator 3 came out and Schwarzenegger, it's not quite the same, right? Yeah. The idea of the Terminator.
Yeah, so he's not the same.
Yeah, he's not that.
He's not the Terminator.
Yeah, he's 7 years old now.
He's the governor.
that does make sense, though, kind of going behind the scenes.
Yeah, for sure.
I think in Hollywood, too, and we've seen this with you and John as well right now, is when you start getting hot.
Right.
You're getting calls. So now's the time to strike with that.
Yeah, and the cool thing is I've really worked hard. We did, you know, we probably went a slower route than we could have, but at the same time, I established myself in such great acting roles, and some of the stuff will still come out, mm-hmm. that now I'm just more well-rounded and people will believe in me for bigger projects. You know, I've really established myself by, you know, which is kind of evident when you look at the projects that I'm getting that I'm on board with that I haven't even filmed yet, mm-hmm. but the offers I'm getting, you know, starring opposite Jodie Foster, just stuff like that. You know,
really, I mean, that's huge. More acting type parts.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I need because I don't want to be just, you know, the big muscle head, the big ex wrestler. I want to mm-hmm. be, you know, Dave can really pull off this part, man. We can make some money with this, you know, around the world. There's people who don't know him as a wrestler.
When you start talking about Drax being your bread and butter, it's one of those things where I think I said this the last time around. It's like it's the role you were born to play.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really is. He really is you. He's a big guy, but very sarcastic.
Yeah.
You know, the way you play that where he doesn't really get the joke, he's very literal, but you have that sense of humor.
A little bit of a deadpan, yeah.
Yeah, it really is you. And when you see that, it's like, holy shit, this is perfect
for
you.
So funny, right?
You know, yeah. But when you're talking about some of the other stuff that you've done, how much have you grown as an actor, even from the first Guardians?
Tremendously, mm-hmm. yeah, tremendously. And it's one of those things where, you know, we've talked about before. I'm an on the job learning actor. I don't have the luxury of going to drama school and all that stuff, so I'm learning on the job. So every time I come off a project, I'm a little better. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, it's just throughout the years, it's just progressively.
Who are some of the guys that you've learned from as far as the
Everybody,
craft?
Man, I really take away. From every job that I've done, I take away something from it, you know. And I've purposely put myself, even if they weren't the best projects, I've put myself next to really, really great actors. You know, like even going back to the beginning, I was always smart about that. Like I did a film called House of the Rising Sun. And the reason why I really thought this would be a great learning experience is because I got to work with an actor named Dominic Purcell. This was very early in my career, and he gave me advice that I'm still using to this day that I always think of.
Like, what is some of the stuff he told you?
He always, you know, it was weird, man. When I first started, he said, you know, just focus on your breathing, man. Sometimes I'm just saying the words, but I'm not thinking, like, what I just went through. Mm. He said, you're always in different settings. You're going to be breathing differently. If you're stressed, you're going to be breathing differently. If you just ran up a flight of stairs, because they don't, you know, they shoot everything out of sequence.
Right. Yeah.
So if you focus, sometimes just focus on your breathing, and it'll add a different element to the scene, to your performance. And I still do that all the time. It's just some things you're saying. If it's in a stressful moment, you're breathing differently.
Mm, that's a great point.
Yeah, man. So I always think about that. And that was something I took back. This is 2010 I did mm-hmm. this. But I still always utilize that and I remember. And like Zoe Saldana asked questions. Like when on the first Guardians we did, she asked so many questions. And I thought, man, we're never going to shoot this scene because she's asking questions. But it's like priceless, man. It's one of those invaluable things you can't ask enough questions, man, because it puts you in the right mindset. You know where you were, where you're going, what you're doing, what you're thinking, how you feel about another character. It all adds up, and it lends to your performance.
Was she asking questions to the director or to
her? To the director, usually to the director, always to the director, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, once again, it makes a lot of sense, you know, relating it back to wrestling, you know, the more questions, especially like if Vince, you know, like if Vince being the director, let's say, but sometimes you're getting messages from the assistant director via Vince. I'd have to go talk to Vince face-to-face to find out, like, what is it that you want? Because most of the time, if he tells you, you'll get it.
It's storytelling.
Right.
It's all storytelling.
Yeah, directly from the source.
And that's one of the things I really feel like, you know, in wrestling, like, some people get it and some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just forget that they're telling a story and not out there just doing moves.
That's the true story, yeah absolutely. Yeah. In the ring and outside of it as well.
Yeah.
His people are completely literal. Metaphors are going to go over his head.
Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch him.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about the new Guardians. It's, you know, in the trailer, it comes out, and you're one of the stars of the trailer. Like, you take the show. It's so great. Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about this movie and about Drax and some of your favorite scenes and how the character has evolved and all that sort of thing.
It's funny, man. This I thought that they were going to go a different route with Drax in this film. I thought he was going to be more of a badass.
Hmm.
Instead, they went the other way. And it's really just, it's almost like a, I would say it's an 80% straight comedy role for me. You know, it's
That's why the character works, though, don't you think?
For sure, and I think, you know, it's one of those things that James just really tuned into on the first one, and he just wrote
James,
more.
The director?
He loved, yeah, James Gunn. Mm-hmm. He loves writing for Drax, and he'll do it as we're filming. Like, as we're filming, he'll say, something will pop in his head, and he'll say, well, say this, say that, say this, say that. I'll do it, and say, ah, and I'll hear him laugh, and he goes, we got it, cut. But he just loves writing for Drax, and I think he just picked up on that, and he just wanted to roll with it, because I do a lot more... A lot more action in Avengers. I start really just...
No, this is Drax in Avengers, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's and I start crazy, tapping into, like, really badass Drax.
Okay. They want you to be that in the Avengers.
Still, you know, there's always going to be a... You know, they want to tap into the funny bit of Drax because people, they enjoy it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's entertaining. But, yeah, there's definitely more... There's a lot going on in Avengers, man. It's...
Have you filmed Avengers already?
I've done part one, yeah.
So it's like... Three parts?
Well, there's... So Infinity Wars is going to be in two parts.
So who's in Avengers? Who else is in it? Everybody. This is Robert Downey Jr. and
everybody. Yeah.
Chris Evans. And
so those are the, you know, the prominent Avengers that have been in all the films, Hulk. But they're really just adding so many characters into this. Because they're also starting to introduce other characters like they did in Captain America. They brought in Spider-Man. But they're going to start moving into different phases of Marvel. So they're introducing other characters. Black Panther, they're going to go a whole series of Black Panther. But Spider-Man is actually the one I'm really looking forward to. You know, because I love that kid. I love Tom Holland. I also love that they're really staying more true to the comics with this whole series. And I think that's because Marvel Studios has gotten involved. You know, I think before, I think it was Sony who had control of
Spider-Man.
Yeah,
Marvel took it back, right?
Yeah, and I think they're doing like a partnership now, but I think they will, I don't know this for sure, but I think they're going to reacquire Spider-Man. I don't know if that's for sure, but they definitely have their hand. They're doing a partnership now, so Marvel Studios is involved.
So how do you feel like when you walk into the room or whatever it is, and make table read or something, and Robert Downey Jr. is there? Did you do some scenes with Iron Man? Yes. Just being around a guy like that, because that's one of the top guys, you know, in the business as far as a performer and actor. Do you just jump right in with him, or is it a little bit of a feeling out process? Does he trust you to be the right character that you need to be?
You know, the cool thing is, this is a great thing, and this is why I love him, and I've been a fan of his, and I told him this. I've been a fan of his since I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
And I told him that before they ever announced this being in the Avengers. I actually... On the second Avengers, I met him at the premiere in London, and he was the only one of the Avengers who went out of his way to come up and meet me and tell me how much he loved Guardians.
Wow.
And so that was, that meant a lot to me. It also put me right at ease because I felt like he's already really respects me as an actor. Mm-hmm. When we started kind of working together, it just felt like we were already had this,
Isn't it interesting you find, like, and you can probably relate to this more than me, but from what I've found, like, you know, musicians and stuff like that, the biggest names are always the coolest ones.
Yeah.
It's the ones in the middle that are kind of sometimes dickish, but, like, you know, like when we did some shows with Metallica, like Lars and James are super friendly, guys.
They don't have anything to prove.
Nothing to prove. Yeah. You get down the ranks a little bit, you know, and
especially
these guys
really lower in the ranks, you're like, why do you have such a shit attitude?
Right.
Calm
down, dude, you know?
So unnecessary.
When you have that with Robert Downey, that's cool to hear because that fits, you know, the vibe of what we're thinking.
Yeah, for sure.
Any of these guys that when you were working with them, were they fans of yours from the WWE?
Chris Pratt.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. And he told me that, you know, and I thought he was bullshitting me. But he actually went home and he had this Batista towel. And he took a picture with it and put it up on Twitter. And I thought it was hysterical. But he had it for years. It was kind of all ratty and stuff. It was really? This big beach towel. Yeah, like probably a big ripoff, merchandise knockoff.
Bootleg or something like that. Yeah. He seemed like you would get along pretty good with him. He seems like a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, if you can't get along with that guy, then you've got an issue. Because he's like the sweetest guy in the world.
Right.
He's just such a friendly guy.
He's really transformed himself as well physically from what he was till now.
Yeah, and it's weird how he just, his career just took off. Mm-hmm. He lost a few pounds and his career took off.
It's amazing how that works, right?
That's crazy, yeah.
Now, I know you filmed Guardians 2 in Atlanta, whereas the first one was in London.
Right.
Was that, why did you switch to the States?
I think that they just, they have a deal now with the Pinewood Studios there.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's one in Atlanta?
Yeah, there's a huge Pinewood Studio, and I think... I guess at the end of the day, it all comes down to the almighty dollar.
Of course,
you know,
of course,
they're going to, you know, get the most for their money. And Right now, Georgia is the hotspot for filming, you know, television and film. They're just all the tax incentives and the studios.
Easier for you, though, at least being in your own country.
It's incredible. For me, I mean, for me, it was, you know, it's an hour flight home. So
yeah.
I got to come home a lot. When I was in London, I didn't come home. I came home once.
You know,
this is over like 7 months.
You got to plan it. Whereas if you're in Atlanta and you finish early and you want to go home for 8 hours, you can do it.
I'm on a flight. There's like, you know, 20 flights a day to
every hour. Yeah, I know, exactly.
Like, you know, I can get off early from work and go home.
That's where we're recording the new Fozzy in Atlanta. And the same thing. If we finished earlier, I would just get jump on. What's this next flight? 5 o'clock. I'm there. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, come back the next day or whatever. It's perfect.
Amazing,
it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, did you, how long, did it take a long time to film part two? In comparison to part one, are pretty much the same?
No, it was a little bit shorter, actually. We had a lot less rehearsal time.
Right.
And there wasn't, we just did one studio. We did three on the first one. We used three studios in London. But I remember just there being a lot more rehearsal. I think with the second Guardians, I think we had like 3 days of rehearsal.
Hmm.
We had a table read in 3 days of rehearsal, I think, and on the first one.
How are you rehearsing scenes? You're doing scene rehearsals? Or?
Yeah, okay. Scene rehearsals. And but on the first one, I think we had like weeks of rehearsals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, plus, the chemistry is not the same the first time. Now you guys are locked in a little bit better, so you don't need as much, right?
Because
it's the exact same cast.
Yeah, and you know, with a few additions. And even at the table read, it was just, I mean, it was such a breeze. I mean, we just flowed right through it. And when I first read the script, I thought there were a few funny bits. I was expecting Drax to be more of a badass, too, so I was a little disappointed because it just didn't read as funny until we were all together. And then you read it, and everybody's in their character, and it's just everybody's laughing out loud. It's just incredible.
That's one thing I like. I always say this, too, like we're talking about WWE stuff, when people want to change the script or, like, you know, I don't really feel comfortable. I was like, listen, if you're in a movie, like you show up for Guardians 2, and you read the script, and you're like, I don't really feel this is right. They're going to go, fine. See you later, buddy. You know, call the next guy in to be Drax.
Right.
There's no debating the script.
Right.
It is what it is, right?
It is what it is. You can, you know, you can change a few words around here, or, you know, kind of put it and make it your own, you know, as far as performing. But yeah, you're not going to show up and change the finish.
It's so ridiculous, right? Hey, Gunn, come here. Let me tell you.
Let me talk to you for a minute, right?
But explain a little bit. Like, this is something interesting that I've never really had much insight into, is a table read for people that are listening.
Right.
Explain exactly what that is.
Yeah, it's just where, you know, you get together. It's usually kind of on the first day. Everybody is together, the whole cast, the director, the producers. I've been a formal, you know, table readings, very informal table readings. But anyway, the cast and director usually get together and read the script so the director can hear everybody do their lines and their own voices. And I think that's where they start to, you know, make little subtle changes here and there. Or the cast can always say, you know, start to make notes on the script. But it's basically just to go over the script as a cast and a director.
So the first time you had a table read for the Guardians, are you a little bit nervous? Like,
oh, terrified.
I don't want to screw it up.
Yeah, terrified. You know, my first table read actually was Riddick, and it was horrible. For one, nobody told me there was a table read, so I'm the last guy walking in the room.
one of my
first big movies, last guy walking in the room. Then I can't see the script because I'm blind, and I got to pull out my glasses, and also I have dyslexia.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm dyslexic, so it's like horrifying that I still am traumatized from being a kid and, you know, reading out loud in class and everybody thinking I'm an idiot because I can't read and it takes me forever to read.
Wow.
Yeah, so I read really slow and I screw up. Like, this is the only word that's popping out, but when I see lives or lives all the time, and I see Elvis. I see Elvis all the time, and I will read it as Elvis. And wait, Elvis is not in the scene.
Where does Elvis come from?
All the time, but
wow, yeah, I didn't know that, dude.
It's like one of those things. But I'm very uncomfortable, and if I can get out of a table read, I will.
Oh,
yeah. But you know what's funny, man? I actually had to be in on the table read for Bond, for Spectre, but I didn't speak in the film. But they wanted me there for the table
just to glare.
They wanted me there for the table read.
Can you growl like this?
Insisted that I be there, and it was very formal. It was the most formal table read I've ever been to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you would think, because I guess the James Bond, just the whole atmosphere is very British.
So British, man. I mean, it was like in this big, just like royal hall, and it was like this big square table, nothing in the middle. And then there was, you know, the cast and the director sitting at the main table. Then there was like producers sitting behind them, and they had like people bringing in like food and drinks and stuff. It was so formal.
Like they're spending more money on the table read than most movies.
Man. It was ridiculous. Low level
movies budget,
right?
Yeah,
it was crazy.
So let's talk about that a little bit, Respector, because obviously Guardians, one of the reasons why the character got overswell is because of your dry sense of humor, your deadpan, the delivery of your lines. Right. Now you show up as Mr. Hanks and you have no lines. Right. You have to emote differently.
Right. Well, you know, the cool thing was is that Sam Mendes actually, so we flew over to meet him. He wanted to meet me. I did my audition.
The director?
Yes, Sam Mendes, director of Spectre. I did my audition, sent him my audition, and my audition was a reenactment of the torture scene in Casino Royale.
Oh, okay.
So that was my audition. So I sent it in, and we kept hearing that, you know, Sam kept going back to it. He really liked it. He kept going back to it.
So did that have a lot of lines in it, the torture scene?
Yes.
So the bad guy's torturing Bond?
So I didn't know what my character was. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to meet me, so we flew over to London, and then he told me the nature of the character. He said, you know, I want you to think like Oddjob and Jaws. This is what we want. We want to go back to that iconic
classic
Bond
villain.
Like he was breaking the bad news to me.
No lines.
And when he said it, I was like thrilled to death because I get it. I'm a fan. But it was almost like he was trying to sell me the role. And I was like, you don't have to sell me the role, man. Yeah. And I literally told him, you don't have to sell me the role. Mm-hmm. I love it. And so now I was like super excited about it. But when it came out, I think there were people who didn't make the connection, who weren't really fans, or didn't watch those films, the, you know, Sean Connery films, Roger Moore films, they didn't get the character. They just thought that I was a horrible actor, so they didn't let
me
speak.
Cut all your
lines? Yeah. And then the one line that they did have me do, you know, it really sucked because originally there was a punchline after the one word that I said, and there was Daniel Craig. He said, I thought he'd never shut up. But not only that, but when I did it, I turned the camera and said, shit. And they called me at home and they said, we want you to do a voiceover. And I said, for what? I have one fucking word. And they said, well, we don't want you to sound so distinctly American. We want you to be, you know, your accent to be a little ambiguous. I said, really? And so I actually, you know, I went to the studio to do a voiceover, and they just repeated shit to me in a few different ways, a few different accents. So, and I just mocked them, and then they just dubbed it in. I went, shit. And I don't know, it was supposed to be some Eastern European French.
What are some of the ways you go, shit?
Shit.
Shit.
So that's what it was, man.
So, but they cut.
And they cut Daniel's line out. Yeah. Okay. So I was like, man, it's not even funny anymore.
See, I wish they don't do stuff like that. Like they did it with Darth Maul in Phantom Menace, where he said nothing for the whole movie and then had like one out of context line. He shouldn't say anything.
Right. I said. I said speechless. I wanted it to be before I went to say, like, I was going to say something, and then I just got yanked off the train.
Yeah.
But they just wanted that one word. I wish he just never said anything.
As the laugh. Yeah. So you mentioned that you're a Bond fan.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, one of my favorite series of all time. What's your favorite movie, Bond movies?
Goldfinger, for sure.
The classic.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah,
I think I love that. Probably the best one overall is that. You know, there's a couple other pretty good ones, too. The Roger Moore ones get a little bit campy. Like if you look at Moonraker or something, it's just awful. Moonraker is probably the worst one.
Yeah,
but Spy Who Loved Me is good, and Thunderball is good. And there's a lot of good ones. But do you think is the ultimate Bond Sean Connery?
Sean Connery, yeah.
Because Craig is good too, though.
Daniel's great, man. You know? But I don't know. I think it's probably just that connection to being, you know, to when I first kind of fell in love with James Bond. Daniel made me a fan again. I have to be honest with you, and I say Daniel made me a fan again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Revamped the whole series.
Man.
What was he like to work with? He seems like he's proper.
He's great, man.
Is he? Yeah.
He's not actually.
Oh yeah, good.
No, you know, and the reason I love him is because he's a bit rough around the edges. You know, he's a sportsman. You know, very into his rugby, and he's kind of a rough dude, a rugged dude. He came and worked out with us a lot and trained hard, and I like guys who kind of put in sweat. You know, they kind of put in the hours in the gym, but. That's kind of why I like him as Bond, because he just looks like he's been punched in the face a few times.
He looks like he could beat somebody up.
He looked like he got drunk and got in a bar fight.
Yeah. You're right. It's not the classic good-looking Pierce Brosnan.
He's
like,
and he's still, you know, he's got that sex appeal, but he's just, you know, he looks like he's just had a few drinks and been in some fights.
I like that. That's why I always liked Christopher Reeve as Superman, but he looked a little bit crazy. Like, not like they have some of the guys afterwards now, like all these good-looking guys. Right. And he was good-looking, but he looked like there was something... like weird about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't like Cavill at all, man.
Yeah, I don't like it.
He doesn't do it for me, not at all. He's Superman, he's just
English kinda, too, and
he's just so dry and just man.
There's the guy they had before that, Brandon Routh.
Yeah, he just one reboot, right? Yeah,
yeah. You're going through the looks rather than the actual the crux of what the character is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, you're talking about movie tough guys and Mr. Hanks. He gets yanked off the train, so he's not. He's not dead, or we don't know if he's dead.
Right, right.
Which is the famous thing that happened with Jaws.
Yeah.
Something would happen to be back in the next movie. I don't know if you could even say, is there a chance that you'll be doing more Bond stuff?
I think there's a chance. I think it would really depend on Daniel. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's...
If he wants to do it again?
If he wants to do it again. If he comes back for Bond 25. Because I think that they left Spectre so open-ended that there's more of the story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if he doesn't come back, they're just going to reboot the whole franchise and you know, start all over again. But I would hope that if Daniel comes back, they would bring back Christopher Waltz and myself. You know?
He's great too.
Yeah.
You must have learned from him. He's a great actor.
You know what I learned from him? That sometimes I feel like I can use, but most of the time not, because it's, you know, I'm just not Chris. I'm not Christopher Waltz. But he takes his time with everything. Like, there's been times, and it's really a cool thing because, you know how, you're familiar, when they say action, like, to me, as soon as they say that, I get a little anxiety, right? It's an anxiety. You feel like you're under pressure.
Right.
And with him, they say action, and then maybe a couple minutes before he opens his mouth.
Really?
Yeah, he just takes his time. He is on his own time. Hmm. And I thought that's brilliant because... To me, when they say action, it's just a little bit of anxiety that's built there. But if you take your own time, take a few deep breaths, and go when you're ready to go, whole different ballgame.
It's a great point.
Yeah,
it's not like you're not jumping off a starting line in a race.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you're like on bigger films and you're like myself, I'm still I'm not at that level where I can take my time.
Sure.
Where I can have I'm not going to have Robert Downey Jr. waiting on me to say my lines.
You're still nervous that you don't want to screw up.
I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want them to think, ah, man, come on, just say your line. You know, you're not the star.
Yeah. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think
Olivier?
You are?
it's one thing about Chris Waltz that I really love is that there's certain guys like that are the muse for the writer.
Right.
For example, Samuel Jackson and Tarantino.
Yeah.
And now Chris Waltz and Tarantino. Waltz, yeah. Like, you can, everything Tarantino writes is perfectly placed and delivered by what Chris does with that, you know?
Yeah.
He's this perfect guy for him.
Yeah. That's a great, I love how Tarantino can just pick out those guys and that's my guy.
Tim Roth was one.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. And he utilizes them over and over and over.
Sure, and that's why. Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's jump back to Guardians just quickly. One of the greatest parts was the first one was the soundtrack. Which was just like this amazing, like, you know, the Chris Pratt's character's mom left him a mixtape, and you hear that music throughout. It's very brilliant, awesome 70s yacht rock.
Yeah.
Does that continue in part two?
Oh, for sure.
Volume two?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The soundtrack's a huge part of the film, you know, and is a huge part of why the first film, you know, did so well, because it's a connection. It's
an relatable.
Emotional connection, you know, with the music and the scenes, and James is real good about playing the music as we're filming, because it just puts you in a certain kind of mindset. You feel it, a certain emotion, and he's good at connecting, you know, music with scenes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, absolutely, it's going to be a huge part of the second one as well.
In a few sentences, what's the basic plot line for part two for people that haven't seen it since it just came out?
Yeah, it's for the second one, it's family. You know, I think the first one, it was kind of a bunch of misfits, you know, joining together, you know, for a greater cause, putting their own, you know, bullshit aside.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I think it's just more about family, whether it be your blood family or chosen family, but it is very much, that's the theme of the film, family.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Are you trying to, do you have to save the world from an invasion or is it something like that? Or
this one? And the second one? Yeah. Oh, there's always, I mean, it's a space epic.
That's
of course.
The plot for every movie, right?
Of course. We're, you know, we're at Guardians of the Galaxy. We have to, at some point, we have to save the galaxy.
Yeah, duh. At some point, we have to guard the galaxy,
idiot. Right. Yeah, I think they used that in one of the trailers. It was like, we're, you know, saving the galaxy for the second time. We can increase our rates or something.
Did you expect, because it's funny, like, I'm not a super comic book guy.
Right.
I know a lot of comic book dudes, but when I saw Guardians, obviously I went to see it because of you. Didn't know any of the characters. I'm going to go, you know, support Big Dave. I don't know Drax is or any of these guys.
I didn't know.
Did you expect, did anybody expect it to be the hit that it was?
I'm sure there's a few people that, you know, expected it, but I didn't.
Right.
I was worried. You know, and I think it's just because it was that unknown property. You know, we're not Iron Man. Everybody knows Iron Man. Everybody exactly. knows Thor. They've already got an audience built in for decades. You know, but it just, we were a little bit of an unknown property. I had no idea who Drax was when I first went to audition. Well, I did by the time I went to audition. Sure, but no, I think that's what was scary. But Marvel was really smart about introducing the characters before the film was even, you know, released.
What do you mean, in other movies or?
No, in trailers. Oh, you know, okay. With the way they went about their marketing, with the music and the uka-chaka, you know, building the trailers and stuff, and introducing the characters a little bit at a time so people became kind of familiar with the characters before the film even came out. So they were really smart, you know, along those lines, but... Yeah, I was amazed, man. Opening weekend, I was just, wow.
I think another reason, because I went and saw that with my kids, who are, you know, they were 8 and 10 at the time, was I can't remember his name, was the talking
Rocket.
Raccoon?
Yeah,
I mean, they loved Rocket and they loved Groot.
Right.
And I think a lot of superhero movies don't have those kid elements of the characters that they can just latch onto.
Yeah, a lot of superhero movies, they just don't, they're just not as fun.
Right, that's
a good point. You know, the characters aren't as interesting, and they're not funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you make people laugh, man. That's going to go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really cool. But we have a lot more elements to work with because, for one, we're a space. Anything can happen in outer space. You know, we're dealing with that. But also with the animated characters, and again, Groot is going to steal this whole film. You know, because now he's a freaking baby. Like, how can you compete with a baby tree? You know,
there was a lot of tears when I went with my kids, and then when the baby Groot showed up, it was like a big,
and now
big pop.
He's, you know, this adorable little baby tree with these great big eyes. It's like, it just pisses me off, man.
We don't like Groot anyways.
Yeah, no,
Drax doesn't like Groot.
Yeah, they don't like each other. It's
even
so
this
funny.
One too?
No, they don't. Still don't like each other.
You got Groot heat.
She betrayed Ronan. He's coming back for her. And when he does, that's when you...
Why would I put my finger on his throat?
What? Oh, no, that's a symbol. This is a symbol for you slicing his throat.
I would not slice his throat. I would cut his head clean off.
Let's talk a little bit about the Blade Runner sequel. That was another one that just came out of the blue, which I wasn't even aware they were doing one, and then I wasn't even aware that you were involved in it.
Yeah.
Did you have a big part in that? Is that finished filming?
We're finished filming. It'll be released in October.
Wow.
It's really...
So you got Guardians in May and Blade Runner in October.
It's a good year
for
me.
This is the year of Dave. It's the Chinese year of Dave.
Yeah, it's weird, man. But it's a great role. It's really a great role. And it's an actor's role. You know, it's so funny because when I first went out to meet the director, he didn't think I was right for the part. And the producers liked me for the part. And they didn't want to force me on the director because, you know, he's just, for one, he's brilliant.
Who was the director?
Denis Villeneuve. Just did Arrival. Sicario. Amazing director. But so they paid a lot of money for me to do a screen test. And I did the screen test, and they hired actors to come in and work with me. And then they showed him, you know, my character from the screen test. And they said, yeah, he's perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, so I that was another role that I fought hard for.
So let's go through this, backtrack a bit. So you get the sides, the scenes, and there's a auditioning for this role. So did you do an audition first?
Yeah, I did. Well, I went out to meet with the director first. The producers liked me for the film.
So the producers go, okay, we see you in Guardians. We think you're good for this.
Right.
Go meet the director.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and I went and right off the bat, he told me he didn't think I was right for the role.
Too big, too...
A few different reasons I can't really say.
Gotcha, yes.
I'll tell you.
Okay. It's secret stuff.
Yeah, but... And their non-disclosure thing is thicker than Marvel's, man.
So that's great,
that's
though.
That's why I'm being, like, super vague.
No, that's cool.
But so he didn't like me for the part. And but actually, we sat and we just bullshitted for, like, 2 hours. Just talked about everything. And then so I went back, and the producers said, oh, you know, we'd really like you to put you on cameras, or, you know, can we get you to do a screen test for Denny? And I was like, sure. You know, I wanted the role. So I was actually filming Guardians at the time, because Denny was really, you know, he was really amazed that I took the time off Guardians to fly out to meet him, and he was really impressed that I really wanted the role that bad. So anyway, they spent the money, and it wasn't cheap for me to do a screen test. But
they're putting together a whole...
They wanted him to actually see me this character, see me do this part, so he could decide whether I was right for it or not.
They believed in you that much?
They did, yeah, they did. And so they did it and showed him, and he loved it. And he was very, I mean, couldn't have been more supportive, this guy, when I was filming, man. He was just, I love it. This is so perfect. He was really, he's like, wow, I'm so glad we did this. And Gosling, too, man. Gosling was, he's, I have such a man crush on this dude.
Oh, Ryan Gosling, he's in it as well?
Yeah, yeah, he's actually the star.
Is Harrison Ford in it?
He is, but Gosling's got the lead in this.
So it's not Rick Decker, per se, as the
lead. He's still coming back. No, it's a sequel.
Gotcha.
I think there was a confusion about that. I think a lot of people thought there was going to be a reboot, and then they were confused about the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But, his same character. Harrison's coming back still to do Decker. But Ryan is taking the lead role in this, yeah.
It seems like and first of all, congratulations on that, because it's hard to audition and screen test and all that sort of thing, you know? Because I find, like, for the roles that I've done and whatever levels they are, when they offer them to you, it's easy.
Right.
When you have to audition, you don't know what they want.
Right.
You don't know what you're supposed to be, so you just have to pick – you have to pick a point and go with it, and if it's the wrong point, tough luck for you, right?
Yeah, and usually most of my auditions have been self-taped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is only my second screen test.
Official screen test.
Official screen test. I realized that when I went to screen test, I realized that I hadn't screen tested since Guardians. It was weird. Like, my wife was there watching. All of a sudden, I'm all nervous and self-conscious about it. But yeah, I guess I lucked out and got the role. But.
Once again, with non-disclosure, don't give anything away. But even just being around Harrison Ford, intimidating. You know, that's obviously an A-plus level guy who's not known as being the most friendly of guys.
Is he not known? Because I experienced that.
Yeah, he's got that reputation.
So it was actually my first day. I was like a kid in a candy store, man. I go to set and they're doing this huge scene, and it's And I guess, you know, there's water involved. So Ryan and Harrison are just soaking wet. And it was pretty cold. It was in Budapest. So I'm just dying to meet these guys. And Ryan comes up, and I give him a big embarrassing hug. I just couldn't even control myself. And Harrison comes up, and somebody introduced him and said, "Hey, this is Dave Bautista, hair farm." And he says, "Hey, how are you? Good to meet you." I said, "Oh, man, it's such an honor to meet you." And I said, "Are you cold?" Because he was wet. And he goes, "No, are you cold?" I was like, "Wow, this just became awkward real fast." And I didn't know what to say after that. I was like, just kind of stumbling with my words, just kind of embarrassed. And then, but then a few days later, while I'm filming, and he comes to set, and I don't know if he didn't remember meeting me, but he introduces himself, and he's like as nice as can be. He's like, "Hey, Dave, how are you, Harrison?" Yeah,
is he working me? You start going to that.
No, that's
right?
I started wondering, but I just sat there and awkwardly smiled, and told him what a fan I was. Went over through the whole spiel.
You know what's funny is that I've been talking about this with my son, is that there's two actors that have played iconic roles where people dress up for them as Halloween and all that sort of stuff. One is obviously Harrison Ford with Indiana Jones and Han Solo.
Right.
Can you guess who the other one is?
Iconic character?
Yeah, two iconic characters.
Oh, shit.
Stallone. Rocky and Rambo.
Right, yeah.
And that's a great segue for the next one, which is you on Instagram the other day, and Stallone posts a video. Stallone, and you're in the background. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell? Now he's with Stallone? I'm starting to really hate Dave Bautista now.
You know, that's so funny.
That a project that you're working on, or what the hell is that?
Yeah, we did it, and I was really, at first I wasn't crazy. Right, so it's Escape Plan 2.
Now, Escape Plan 1 was the one he did with Schwarzenegger. They were on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
The freight ship or whatever it was.
Prison ship. Prison / cruise ship.
Yeah, exactly. It's the prison cruise.
So this is what, this was my reservation about the film, because I wasn't crazy about the first one film. Mm. But why I did want to do it, for one, I love the director. His name is Stephen Miller. And I love the DP, the cinematographer. His name is Brandon Cox. I've worked with him before.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I just wanted to work with Stallone. There's no way I was turning that down. So I took the role, and it was awesome. It was one of the best times I've ever had on a set, because that dude is just—he's such a great guy.
Yeah.
Stallone—he's so social, and he's just so friendly. He's full of a million stories. I mean, there's nothing pretentious about him.
Mm-hmm.
I love him.
Once again, top of the mountain guy, super cool, right?
Yeah, just wanted to shoot the shit, wanted to make Instagram videos.
Yeah, I find that with Arnold and with you, with Sloan, probably impressed with your muscles. They're muscle guys.
Yeah, we talked about training a lot. He loves wrestling.
Yeah.
Long history with WWE and wrestling, wrestlers in general.
Yeah.
But
who did he put somebody in the Hall of Fame? Hogan.
Yeah, that's right.
And he put Hogan on the map.
Funny, you know, he was telling me some really great stories, like backstories, you know, about Rocky II. And I want to say, oh, he was bench pressing with Franco Colombo. I was like, why are you bench pressing with Franco Colombo? But he tore his pec. Oh, wow. So you remember when Rocky II, when we switched from Southpaw, went to Orthodox?
Yeah.
That was also he could cover up his torn pec.
Wow.
So that was kind of, I thought that was, man, that's great. Like, I love hearing this stuff.
Yeah, old school stuff. Yeah. Now they would just CGI a pec in or something.
Right, but that's what we did, man. We started, and he's, you know, he's a self-deprecating guy, too, which is great. I love, man. I really appreciate. Yeah. Even, like, when it comes to scripts, you're like, oh, man, that's terrible. I'm not saying that. Like, I loved it. He just doesn't take everything so seriously.
Right,
he's just
a fun guy.
And he just takes a piss, you know. I love that, man. But he's just a good fun person, man.
So it was a good
one of the best times I've ever had filming.
That's almost like a surprise thing. I heard nothing about that they're even doing that movie.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the reason they did is, you know, I don't think the first one did all that great here, mm-hmm. but it made like a buttload of money internationally. Overseas, yeah, especially I think in China it made like $200 million in China.
See, because I think in China Stallone versus Schwarzenegger was still huge.
You know? And I think that was the plan. I think Arnie had to back out for some reason at the last minute, mm-hmm. And they gave me a call, and I was like, first one, yeah, but you get to work with Stallone, yeah, I'm there.
I love the fact that you're at the point now where they're calling you to do a escape plan sequel, and you're like, man, which is great.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things, man. It's just, it's a short shoot. You know, it was just, you know,
you had perfect timing for it. And
yeah, it was just one of those things. It just kind of worked out. But at the end of the day, I did it because I trust Stephen Miller, the director, mm-hmm. and the DP, and I knew it was going to have a completely different feel than the first film. So I think it's going to be that's why I almost hate that they're calling it Escape Plan 2, because mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a standalone film. But at the end of the day, I just wanted to work with Stallone.
Yeah. Just to have him hang out with you and talk to him.
I just wanted to pick his brain. And that was the funny thing, our first scene together, we sat down together, and the first thing I said to him, I said, I won't be a fanboy today. I'm going to let you out of it today. But tomorrow, and then before we got out of the car, I was asked, so tell me about Rambo. Tell me about Rambo. Like, everything was, and I was telling him about, like, it's really a shame that he got, you know, everybody remembers Rambo, and they kind of, you know, it's like that, you know, kind of cheesy, generic 80s mm-hmm. action hero. It was kind of the thing at the time, and that's how they remember it. They don't remember First Blood.
I was just going to say that.
And First Blood was a great film.
That's an actor's...
And when he had his meltdown, his like Vietnam veteran meltdown, it's like broke my heart.
Yeah.
Like it's one of that's. I actually stole that from him, and I used it in a different film.
Oh, did
but
you?
It was kind of, you know, that was based on that scene. Yeah, that's where I got the emotion from.
I knew what you were going to say before you even said it, because I just recently saw that. There's another scene where he's like in the lean-to where he has the tarp and he uses it.
And he just freezes.
He's cut his arm and his bicep on the tree and he has to sew it up. Just the acting with not saying anything. Yeah. He is an underrated actor.
Sure. But that's why, because people, when they look back, they relate him to that, you know, stereotype of Rambo, or that, you know, the bad movies like Cobra.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
which was great in the 80s, but now when you look back, it just seems so hokey. But, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what they don't remember. You know, he should be associated with Copland, and First Blood. I mean, those are great. And Rocky, man. Rocky
amazing. He's acting
still
in that.
Still puts me in tears.
Yeah, yeah? Totally. Yeah. I think the same, maybe it's not as much of an acting, but Arnold is in that same boat. Like, his comedic sense has been forgotten. It's so amazing, you know.
Yeah, his comedic time is incredible.
I went to long story short, I went to this big fundraiser that Arnold was doing for one of his charities, and ended up, you know, sitting next across from him, you know, shooting the breeze, hanging out. Same thing. I don't want to be a fanboy, but I want to talk to him, so we're just talking. And then he finally gets up to do his speech, thanking people for coming. And he's like, "Oh, thanks to the mayor of Tampa, and thanks to this guy." And he's like, "And look at Chris Jericho sitting there. What a great athlete! His muscles are bursting out of his jacket. Look at him. What a great guy!" And I was like, oh my God, this is the best night of my life.
Oh, man,
like, I wish I could have filmed it.
That's so funny.
You know, when you get that little bit of validation from those guys, it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's the stuff you only like get people like doing that bad Arnold impersonation, doing that. But when you actually have Arnold doing
he's doing it, like, and he does sound like that. Yeah. Listen, I mean, I don't know if this is a story you want to tell, but there was something that I remember you told me a few months ago when I saw you last about you were going to work with De Niro.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out.
Right.
Is it somebody that you wanted to get to work with?
Yeah, it was kind of heartbreaking. I was really disappointed. I did a film called Heist.
Heist.
And that was another one. And this was the reason I wanted to do this, because I thought I was going to be opposite De Niro. Mm-hmm. And so his people wouldn't approve me for the role, because, mm-hmm. you know, they have cast approval. So I didn't get approved for the role. And it didn't make sense to me at the time. I thought it was good for the role, and it was a role the producers wanted me for. So they offered me another role playing opposite De Niro. It was just a different type of role, and it was a smaller role. And I said, okay, well, I'll take that role. Still put me on screen with De Niro. And his people didn't approve me for that role either. So they said, well, they offered me a role playing, you know, the bad guy in the film that I ended up playing. And it didn't have any scenes with De Niro. And I said, well, I don't want that role. I'm not going to have scenes with De Niro. But his people approved me for that role. I was like, well, wait a minute. How's that make sense? And I thought, oh, okay, well, they just don't, you know, De Niro's people don't want me to have scenes with De Niro. Okay, well, then I'm not going to be in the movie. I pouted for about 10 minutes. And then I was like, fuck them. I'm going to take this other role, and I'm going to shove it down their throat. I'm going to steal the movie. Right. So I took that other role out of spite.
That's so amazing to me, though, that they have approval over every single actor in the cast.
Yeah, big stars like that, especially on films like that.
Hmm.
I mean, you're always going to have cast approval. But, what the cool thing about that is I end up co-starring in that with Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
He's the hottest guy in town right now.
He's super blown up.
That's Negan, right? Yeah.
Negan. And I took away a lot from the film with that. And you know what's great about that is neither one of us were crazy about the script. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of tossed it, man. We just kind of said whatever we wanted. And usually every other word was f**k or shit. there was so much cussing going on in that. And it was just because we were improvising a lot of script.
Yeah.
You know, but he's brilliant, man. This guy's... He's really getting his recognition because people are seeing him weekly. But he's really a brilliant actor, man, and a great guy. Like, really fun to hang out with.
You know what else is interesting, too, is at the very least, I know you didn't do any scenes with him, but you're still in a movie with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And you were approved. You didn't get the scene you wanted, but once again, that's a pretty good feather in your hat, man.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Because if you were that shitty,
they
would just go, get this guy out of here.
Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah. Can we get somebody else in here?
Right.
So.
But yeah, I liked the movie. It was a little predictable,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think it's one of those things. It's not a high-budget film. It was, you know, kind of a fun story and, you know, gangster movie, but it was good. I'm glad that I did it. I got a lot of experience doing it, and I got to work with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's, like I said, I learned a lot from him.
I have part of a plan.
What percentage of a plan do you have?
You don't get to ask questions after the nonsense you pulled on Nowhere.
I just saved Quill.
We've already established that you destroying the ship that I'm on is not saving me.
When did we establish?
Like 3 seconds ago!
I wasn't listening. I was thinking of something else.
Is there anything coming up that you got, that you signed, that you're excited about, you can talk about? Or
yeah, I got a few movies coming out this year. We had real good success with Bushwick at Sundance. Mm. That'll continue to do the festival round, I think. But I'm doing this.
Is that an indie film?
It's an indie Bushwick? Film. Yeah. Indie film, which we really, it was kind of one of those labor of love films. You know, we did. Nobody made a lot of money. It was super low budget. Did it with a great actress named Brittany Snow. She's just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Brittany's awesome. And she's a Tampa girl. She's from Tampa.
Is she really?
Yeah, she's from Tampa.
Nice.
But I'm doing this film called Hotel Artemis. And first-time director, his name is Drew Pierce, but he's written a lot. He's a very established writer. But I'm playing opposite Jodie Foster.
Hey, you mentioned that earlier. Tell us about that.
I'm super excited about this. But it's, you know, again, it's an indie.
Is it a science fiction or something like that, though?
Well, it's not really a science fiction, but it's based future? In the not-so-distant
future.
Distant future. Yeah, it's 20 years down the road. And it's just, you know, world economy has collapsed and... I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but it's just really a great role for me. And at the end of the day, man, I'm starring next to Jodie Foster.
So on the poster, it's Jodie Foster and Dave Bautista.
There's going to be, I think Charlie Day has signed on.
Okay.
So Charlie's
He's
brilliant.
Funny,
man.
Yeah.
And there's, great. I mean, it's going to be an ensemble cast, but yeah, I mean, I'll be
Dude,
playing.
That's so great, man. Think about that.
Dude, it's crazy.
In the last 2 or 3 years, Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Stallone, De Niro, Jodie Foster, you know, all these legit legendary people.
Man, that's what I'm...
And you're stupid ass.
I know, right? I was like, you know, kind of like, it's same. It's like sticking me with Ric Flair. Like,
yeah.
You know, I have this picture at home, and it's It's Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Ric Flair. It was actually a gift from Rick. And then me, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, who doesn't belong in this picture? And it's kind of been the same with my film career. I'm looking at me, like when these casts, like when I saw the cast photos from Bond, and I'm seeing all these brilliant actors, and my big goofy ass. Who doesn't belong in this picture? But, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, but it works, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned, Rick, and the WWE, and as we wind down here, we just had WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You had some huge WrestleMania matches.
Yeah.
Two or three main events? Two?
Two, I guess. Me, Hunter, and me, Take.
Yeah. You, Take? But well, there was like, also the triple threat with you, Orton, and Daniel Bryan.
Oh, right, yeah, right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. What was your favorite WrestleMania match that you had?
Taker.
Yeah? Tell us sure, a little Taker. Bit about that, because that was when he was in the middle of his streak, right?
Yeah, that was, he was still, you know, still had the streak then, but it was just, I felt like that one I'd really come into my own. I don't feel like anybody carried me through that match. With my first main event with Hunter totally carried me through the match. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to carry a WrestleMania.
That was a huge money making match, though.
Huge,
I think it's
huge.
Top five of all time for something long.
But that was, I have to give all the credit to Hunter. You know, the way he built the story, the way he built the match, putting me over, putting the title on me. It was all him.
Mm-hmm.
Even as soon as we had stumbled onto, there was some money to be made there when people saw that me and Hunter might turn on each other. Or that I might turn on Hunter. People lost their minds. Mm-hmm. Hunter wanted to book a match. Vince wanted to book a match next week.
Yeah.
And Hunter was like, not a chance. Uh-huh. No, we're going to milk this, man. We're going to ride it out. We're going to take it all the way to Mania. And he really fought for that. He believed that. And that was the way, that's the way they used to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. That was like a regular thing.
As far as building up to the big match.
Yeah, building a story, building a storyline, building a big main event match. So he was, got to give all the credit to that. And then, again, with the match, he told you, I don't remember a lot of the match, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just gone from my mind. I didn't sleep much a couple nights before that. I was I could barely feel my left leg. I was having so many back issues.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, like disc issues or something?
Serious disc issues. Yeah, yeah. By the time we got to Australia, I was using painkillers.
Oh, okay.
Which I had never, I've been really against my whole career. I just mm-hmm. never wanted to go down that road. But I couldn't, because remember we went on a tour to Australia like right after.
Right after, yeah.
Yeah, that Mania. And I just couldn't get through the tour. I was dying. I was in so much pain. And I started getting shots in my back, epidurals in my back when I got back. And got them for years. Kind of struggled with back issues.
How did you get rid of them?
My back issues? Mm-hmm. I had surgery.
Oh, you had the surgery. Okay.
Yeah, I actually didn't have surgery until after I really messed up my back and with my match with Cena when I went through the ramp.
Which really did. You took a backdrop through the ramp.
Yeah, and it was just stunk on wrong, and I ended up breaking. I had a compression fracture in my L1, so I broke my back on that one. And
wow.
About a year later, I just couldn't take it anymore. Couldn't hardly walk, and went and had back surgery. And
feel better now?
A whole new man.
Do you do any stunts at all when you're doing your movies, or is it yourself?
I do a few. You know, I have a great stunt man. His name is Rob DeGroot, and we've done like
Robbie Groot.
Rob DeGroot, yeah.
Oh, DeGroot. Uh oh.
Yeah. But I met him on the first Guardians, and we've done like 8 films together now.
So you take him with you, like when you're
man. When I met him, I latched on, because before that, I was doing all my own stunts. I was having to do my own stunts. I couldn't find anybody to double me.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I found him, because he's big, jacked up, and he's about as good as he can get. He's
so
athlete,
you guys are like a fluid. Team when they sign you for a movie.
My guy,
you got to sign.
Yeah.
So that's great for him. He's like it's like being a guitar tech for Eddie Van Halen or something. You got all these gigs.
Right. Yeah. Well, he'd work otherwise, but I've. You know, he's been really loyal to me. Like, he's turned down stuff so he could be there for me.
Gotcha.
And I really trust him, because he will be the first guy to say, sometimes even if I know, stuff is safe, I'll be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he's just always concerned about my well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So I, usually big stunts, I just, like on, just for example, when James Bond, when they set me on fire on the train, that wasn't me.
What?
Like, I have no desire to be set on fire. Like, I'm like, Rob, you mind if they set you on fire? He's like, no.
Yeah, that's his job.
Not before.
But once again, it's the world that we live in the WWE, where you're half actor, half real life stuntman, and that proven the fact you broke your back on that on that stunt, right?
I always tell people, and it's true, but I usually say it for a laugh. I say I'm more of a glorified stuntman than I am an actor. But a lot of times I like to do my own fight stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just the bigger stunts that I did this movie, and football stadium where I had to swing off the top of the roof. Like, I don't have any desire. Mm. I'm not qualified. And well, that's just
blatantly
off the top of the
dangerous.
It's super dangerous. You know? Like, you know, stuntman, please. You know,
yeah. Someone who knows how to do this.
What, you know, they know how to rig themselves up. And, right. You know, just, I don't have any desire.
Tell me a little bit more about the Taker match that you had. You said that when you were, you felt like you had the confidence at that point.
Yeah, that was just, I really felt like I had come in to my own. You know, I didn't feel like, you know, anybody carried me through that match. And I really think that was really kind of a personal statement for me, because I thought for a lot of reasons we deserved to be the main event in that WrestleMania.
Who was the main event that year?
I think it was Shawn and Cena.
Okay, that's when Hunter got hurt or something on those lines, and I put Shawn in his place.
It was Shawn and somebody. I think it was Shawn and Cena.
But having said that, though, any match with Taker at WrestleMania is a main event.
Main event.
It might not go on last, but it is the main event.
Any card that Taker's on, he's the main event.
Right. Exactly.
But I thought we should have had it, and we both thought that we were main event as well. But for some reason, you know, they just decided not to go with us. And I thought, because we had, you know, our storyline was awesome. We built it. There was a few, you know, kind of monumental landmarks with, you know, Taker never holding that title before. I don't think he had that title.
So it was a title match that you had.
It was a title, and then also I was dropping that title to him, and I thought we should have been the main event. But anyway, I really thought we stole the show. So I was just really, really proud of that match. Like, really proud. And it was a great match.
And how do you like working with Taker?
I love it, man. Yeah. I love it. He's fun. He's super easy. He just gets it, man. He's just, you know, he's super athletic. You know, it's amazing how big he is and how athletic he is.
The best big man of all time.
Best by far. Sure. There's just nothing he can't do. Mm-hmm. And he's just always just super relaxed. He's just been there. He's seen everything. He knows what's going on. He's
never panics.
So you don't really have a carry. All you got to do is just go out there and be in it and perform and do what Taker tells you.
Plus, when you work with a guy like that, with the amount of respect he has from the fans,
sure.
I mean, you don't even have to do much, and you're going to get the biggest reaction.
Yeah, super easy.
And then when he does turn on the speed, then you really get going.
That's what I mean. Yeah, just super easy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just fun.
Do you miss wrestling at all?
Yeah, I miss it a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny because the last time we spoke, you were just starting to get into acting, and you said that. And now I was thinking, well, after all these movies and all this momentum, but you still miss it, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. You know. There's just an adrenaline rush that goes along with it. What I don't miss is the company, to be honest with you. I don't miss WWE. Mm-hmm. I miss wrestling. I just don't miss dealing with the company and
the
bullshit.
Politics or the whole rules and regulations.
Bullshit, man.
Yeah.
It's just too much bullshit.
You think that they would be going out of their way to have you come back and do something, though?
I've asked. Well, I've asked for what I want. I'll tell you, and I've talked to Hunter about it, and I've talked to Vince about it. And I said I would come back and run a whole program with Hunter. But that's the only thing I'm interested in doing. Mm. You know, and they're just not interested in it. Mm. You know?
They don't want you to come back and work with Hunter.
I guess not. You know, they just, and I've run it by them a few different times, and they just say, you know, I'll think about it, Vince. Every time I ask him about it, I'll think about it.
So there's nobody else that you would want to work with?
At this point, it's just no, because it would be like my retirement thing. Mm-hmm. It would be what I would go out on. I'd come back and I'd do it, and I would do a whole program, and I'd be done.
Yeah.
But that's how I would want to go out. It's really because we have such a history together, and it's such there's so much history built in. There's an easy story to be told, and I think people will get into it and they'll like it. Mm-hmm. You know, and Hunter, he's just awesome to work with.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the best ever.
Incredible.
It's funny, though, because in a world that we live in where the WrestleMania main event this year was Brock versus Goldberg, it's like you could do Hunter versus Batista. Why not? You know what I mean?
Man, and I've asked, but now it's at the point where I just, you know, I'm tired of asking.
Yeah, being the amount of steam that you have right now, you shouldn't really have to ask.
And
you should be calling
it.
It
would be kind of an easy thing.
Dave, how are you, pal?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you would be expecting.
And I told, you know, and this is, I always, you know, the last time I talked to Vince about it was, a while ago. And I said, if we say we're going to do it, I can put it on my calendar and I can, but now, like, my calendar fills up pretty, like, I'm already booked up for, like, the next year and a half.
Right.
And so my window is getting, so I'm not getting younger, but I don't know if it'll ever happen, but that would be the way I want to go out. You know,
did you ever work with Brock back in the day?
Only in OVW.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's OVW. A match.
Yeah. We worked one house show when in WWE, but he just jobbed me out. It was a total squash match.
That was when you were very, very green.
Yeah. Though. I hadn't even... You know, we had been with Evolution.
Yeah.
Started Evolution.
Different story now. That's a money match. Yeah.
Brock dropped me on my head.
Do you ever watch? Do you ever watch Raw at all or SmackDown?
I haven't watched in a long time, but yeah, I was watching. You know, kind of.
Is there anybody that new guys that you like that you see?
Well, the new guys that I did like, they're not really new anymore.
Like who are you talking about?
Bray Wyatt. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought he was incredible, man. Mm-hmm. I love everything about that kid.
Yeah, well, he's the champ right now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I love everything about him, man.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have worked with him.
He's a big boy, too. He's deceptively big. Like, you see him on TV, you see him up
super
close.
Athletic.
Yes.
He can go. Yeah. I love that kid. And he can run his mouth, too.
Yeah, he's a lot like you. He can go as a big man. He can work.
And I personally just like him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's a funny
good old boy. Yeah.
he's relaxed, you know, nothing real pretentious about him. He just kind of, you know, just wants to go and work, mm-hmm. have good matches. And, mm-hmm. and I think he's just super talented, but he'd be at the top of my list. And you know, Titus is my boy.
Yeah, man.
I would love to go and do something with him, whether it's against him or tag with him. But I'd love to just so I can say that we did.
Yeah.
We've never gotten a chance to work together.
You've helped him over the years, help him get in there and stuff.
He always gives me way more credit than I deserve.
Okay.
I always say that because I didn't really do anything other than tell him what he needed to do. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then he did it all on his own. But just because we were friends way before he got into wrestling, when he was still playing football, actually. And so, but he always gives me a lot, I think, more credit than I deserve.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I've given him advice over the years, but some of it he's taken, some of it he hasn't. You know, I told him he should have left the WWE, you know.
When he got suspended?
After he got suspended, I said, dude, I would have been out of there.
You didn't like that idea, huh?
No, I hated it, you know, because I thought that was a conversation. Vince should have pulled him aside and said, don't ever fucking do that again. And it never would have happened again. It should have been a man-to-man thing if he had such an issue with it. You know, which I could see the point where he may. It was just, you know, bad timing. You know, but Vince is a playful guy. You know, we're always grabbing each other. He always wants to wrestle. And, you know, once you get somebody in the mindset that you guys are on those terms, then that's just what it is, man. Don't, you know, change your mind just because, you know, the timing.
Because it was in front of the crowd.
He was embarrassed. You know, that's when you pull somebody aside. I think, especially a guy like Titus, who's, like, super loyal. Like, he loves that company. Good heart, man. He does so much. You pull him aside and give him the benefit of the doubt. And say, hey, man, don't do that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bad choice, man. Don't do
this
it
is when
again.
He grabbed Vince on the stage in front of everybody. And then he was suspended for 3 months or something like that.
Yeah, and he just, I mean, the guy doesn't have any bad intentions in his heart, man. He's just such a good guy. And so I hated to see it. And I felt like that was such a slap in the face. Man, I really felt like they just spit right in his face. Because they suspended him right through WrestleMania.
Right, yeah.
Man, you don't do that. Guy busts his ass all year long, and then you take that away from him mm-hmm. over something that should have been. But not only did he not talk to him and tell him, you shouldn't have done that, man, but he suspended him, but he didn't even do it personally. He had somebody else do it. Mm-hmm. And then he fined him, and he didn't have...
Yeah.
He's just, you know...
Yeah.
You man up. That's when you man up, and you talk to your guys, especially your guys who, like, he's just so loyal to the company.
Right.
You give him that respect to say, man, you just...
Problem is, if he does walk away, where does he go? You know, that's the
problem. I mean, easily he could coach football.
Right.
But I think he could actually be just a public speaker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's still the president of the Black Alumni for Florida. He's educated.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a hell of a background in football.
He was voted Father of the Year.
He can do numerous things, and he's not making a ton of money with the company. Mm-hmm. So I think he'd easily transition into something else. Yeah. But he just loves wrestling.
Yeah.
He grew up a fan. He loves this. This is his dream, and he's just not giving it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until they force him out the door, he's just not giving it up.
What do you miss most about wrestling? Like, what you said, the actual taking bumps and putting together the matches.
Yeah.
And...
Well, I miss like this. I'm sitting around like
camaraderie.
At the end of the day, you know, just kind of bullshit, sitting in the locker room all sweaty. You know, maybe having a beer or something. Just
you love it now too, because the guys actually do have a beer afterwards and relax. Whereas for a while that went away. It was just, I think, just you and me would be out hanging out.
It was weird. Right?
It's not like that anymore.
It's
rain. And the Usos and Gals and Anderson.
They're all old school, man.
Old school and fun. Yeah. Fun. So much fun. Bray. Yeah.
Anybody,
great guys.
Any Samoan they're going to have in the locker room is old school.
Yeah, exactly.
They're born old school.
That's exactly right. They're born that way. Yeah.
But that's great. I miss that. And I miss driving down the road. You know, I miss just entertaining the crowd.
Because it's different when you're acting. You know, like you see your results six months down the line.
Yeah, it's so different. And it's a different type of... satisfaction, man. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm very passionate about it, but at the end of the day, it's just not as fun.
Yeah.
You know, entertaining, you know, it's like being, it's to me, it's, I always, the way I describe it, it's weird because you know both feelings, but to me, it's as close as an athlete can be to being a rock star. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because you know what it's like to be a rock star and a pro wrestler, you know. But that's just, that's, I think that that's as close as a feeling as I will ever get to being a rock star. Mm-hmm. Just that immediate feedback, that adrenaline, and playing with the crowd and pissing the crowd off or, making them, you know, whatever. I miss that, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, hopefully you'll get a chance to do it
one
of these days. Yeah. Final question. What's your favorite Drax joke?
So it's, James tried to get this in the first film, but Drax, the reason Drax never wears a shirt is because he has sensitive nipples. And James, it's so funny because in the first film, that wasn't originally in the script. And I came to one of the rehearsals one day and we're reading through the lines, and I read the line where it says something about having sensitive nipples, and I read it and I look up at James and he's sitting in his chair going, because he knew he had just wrote it in the night before. But they actually cut it out of the first film. Uh-huh. But he was determined to get it into the second film, so he wrote it a bunch of times. I'll actually see the second film for the first time this Sunday.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet. But,
okay.
But the sensitive nipples thing is in there.
You know it made it?
I know it made it. It made the cut this time.
Does he have a line about it? Or?
Yeah, a few different lines.
Yeah.
A couple times where he's just in horror, but you know, because his nipples have been touched and he's just like losing it.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, congratulations, Dave, thanks, all your success, man. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm a legit A-list movie star.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know about that, but thank you.
A-.
Yeah. You know, I forgot, I should have told you about when we started talking about Bond. So I did a movie this year with Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's, you know, my second Bond that I've worked with.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. And I love that dude too, man.
He good?
He's awesome. Yeah. Not only is he a hell of an actor.
He seems like he's pretty funny.
But he's just he's like super down there. It's like, I was talking about, because for some reason, I always imagine him to be like a little uppity and a little snooty.
Very British. Once again,
Well, for one, he's not British, but I thought he lived in London. He's Irish.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he was like, where do you live? I thought you lived here. He goes, no, man, I live in Malibu. I'm an old hippie, man. And he was like, all of a sudden, like, I'm just imagining this guy just sitting in Malibu smoking weed all day. But that's kind of how he is. He's like super laid back. He has like a place.
Bond 420.
He's like a place in Malibu and a place in Hawaii. He's just like a super laid back kind of hippie dude, you know, with an Irish accent. I love him, man.
What's the movie called?
It's called Final Score.
Final Score.
Yeah, and that was when we were talking about the football stadium.
Oh, okay, swinging on down.
Yeah, but he's a great guy, man, like super social, too, and just like a man's man. You know, he's so pretty to look at, you wouldn't think.
Yeah.
But he's like super rugged. Yeah, he's like real, very Irish.
That's cool.
Yeah, I love him, man.
Let me ask you this, and since you brought that up as another last question, is there anybody that you want to work with?
There's a few guys, man. I mean, a few actors, God, there's somebody I was thinking of the other day. You know, I love Keanu, man. I'd love to do something with Keanu. But I love actors like Jake Gyllenhaal and Idris Elba, Denzel. Mm. Everybody wants to work with Denzel.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
I love Vincent D'Onofrio. I've heard like really great things about him. Chris had such a good experience working with him. I'd love to work with him. There's a few other people.
If a Schwarzenegger thing came by, is that one?
For sure, yeah.
That's for
everybody. He's an icon, man. Everybody.
We all, you know, grew up with him.
We all make fun of him, but we all want to work with him.
We all want him to say, look at this great athlete.
Right, yeah. How can you not love Arnold?
Plus,
I'm a huge, you know, bodybuilding mark from back in the days, too. So, yeah, of course I'd want to work with him.
And
Dwayne, man. I'd love to work with Rock.
That would be cool. He doesn't ever bring in any of the boys to work with.
I talked to him. It was been a couple years ago now, but I talked to him about it. And he seemed all up for it. It's just we haven't gotten that project. But originally there was talks about me being on this Fast and Furious that will be coming out. Mm. And there was an issue. There was a conflict because of Guardians.
Gotcha.
So we just couldn't make it work. But he was all up for it, man. So
will there be another Guardians?
For sure. Yeah, there'll be a Guardians 3. Definitely.
Man.
Yeah.
Maybe you can hire me to be your cabana boy or something like
cabana
that.
Just, no, man. You got to. I want to. When are you guys? Are you guys going to be touring with Metallica at all?
We did the tour with them 3 years ago in Australia.
Yeah.
Because
I've never seen Metallica perform.
Oh, they're great, man.
Yeah.
You'd love them. They're doing a stadium tour this summer, so.
Would you think you'd be your guys be on that?
We won't be on that now.
No.
That's a call up. Hey, James, put me on. Put me on. Yeah, but that's all part of the thing, too. You got to build your way up that ladder as well. Yeah. So we've had those. We've done Kiss. We've done Metallica, Avenged Sevenfold, Slash. So it's been a lot of. Right. Last tour was pretty good for us. So this one hopefully will be the same as far as getting on some of those big tours.
You got to let me know, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I want to experience.
Come a long way from. Where was it that you came and saw us one time? In Jackson, Virginia.
Springfield, Virginia. Yeah. It was fun though, man. 15,
yeah, we always have a good time, man. Yeah, it was a good time. A killer. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, man.
The beast hide is too thick to be pierced on the outside. I must cut through it from the inside.
Huh? No, Trask! Wait a minute! Trask!
All right, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in theaters now. And you heard Big Dave. There's going to be a third installment, and he will be back as Drax. Good for him. I'm so proud of him. Plus, you'll see Drax in the upcoming Avengers movie Infinity War that's coming up next May. You'll also get to see Dave in Blade Runner in October. And maybe there's a final WWE run in the future. Never say never. Never say never about Titan Team Tiger Awesome. We got to hear this week's news, according to TTA.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. In fashion news, last week Nordstrom started selling jeans covered with fake mud for $425. The pants are designed to give the wearer an air of blue-collarness and the appearance that they've recently shit themselves. When reached for comment, Actual Mud was furious, but calmed down long enough to issue the following statement. Quote, "How dare you?" And now it's time for a look at the weekend's pleather. A high-pressure situation in the crotch brings an 80% chance of moisture to the squeaky back seat of an 86 Plymouth, and even an afternoon shower won't chase away that humidity. For more insufferably useful news, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday on the Jericho Network, right here on Podcast One.
And if you always want to be caught up on these ridiculous idiots and the most important news headlines, then you got to subscribe to the Team Tiger Awesome Show at Apple Podcasts. This week we did a create a band. It's very, very funny. I was involved. It's me, Mundy, Truly, and Clint Gage. Please go check it out. Very, very funny. Subscribe and stars. New episodes every Sunday, and also leave all the Jericho Network podcasts a 5-star rating and review. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. Beyond the Darkness 5 days a week. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. The Raven Effect. He's talking about his whole origin working in Portland wrestling and Memphis wrestling. It's very interesting. Go check that out. And, of course, Keep It at 100 with Conan. Do it for me as well. Do it for Talk is Jericho. And also talking about Beyond the Darkness, I got more big news for you. The Beyond the Darkness team have just launched a brand new podcast, True Crime Tuesdays, but you can only get this one at patreon.com. It's a subscription show, but it's worth the money. For $5 a month, you get a new True Crime episode every Tuesday with no ads. That's pretty cool. So go sign up on Patreon and get in on True Crime Tuesdays. Great stuff. And one last thank you to all of our sponsors who are able me to do this show for you for free for twice a week. I'm talking about DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY Yoga related merch. Books. Sign up at books.com to use my promo code Jericho to get 20% off your order and free weekday shipping. Saks. Go to Saks Underwear. That's two X's. SaksUnderwear.com/Jericho. Get 20% off your first order. The best underwear you're ever going to have. Little Caesars, Smokehouse Pizza, Geico for car insurance. It's your one-stop shop here. I'm better than Amazon at this point. Thank you for listening. Keep listening to the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and next Wednesday. Speaking of next, right here on Talk is Jericho, I'm going to have, who's going to be here? Who would I think? How about the summer movie preview with Team Tiger Awesome? Right, all the movies that are coming out this summer, we're going to discuss all of them. It's some great stuff, super hilarious, super fun. The summer movie preview this Wednesday. And don't forget, I'm doing another shirt to support juvenile diabetes research. It's a goat shirt, my face on a goat body, because I am the goat. Go check it out at represent.com/goat and buy a couple shirts to help support me in my quest to destroy juvenile diabetes. So we'll see you then. In the meantime and in between time, we'll see you on Wednesday. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Now repeat back what I just said.
I am Groot.
No! No, that's the button that will kill everyone! Try again.
I am Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I am Groot.
Uh-huh.
I'm good.
No! Does anybody have any tape out there? I want to put some tape over the death button.
Nobody has any tape.
Not a single person has tape.
You have an atomic bomb in your bag. If anybody's going to have tape, it's you.
I have to do everything.
You are wasting a lot of time.
That's a really bad sign.